Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Wednesday, April 5th, 2023. Front page. MDC receives proposals for downtown space. One local company among the four providing options for the former Western United Life building space. By Stuart Doreen. One local hotel group is among the four to offer a proposal to the Midland Development Corporation for the land where the Western United Life building once stood. Insignia Hospitality Group of Midland joined Valencia Hotel of Houston, Beithler Real Estate Services LLC of Chicago, and Midland Downtown Renaissance LP as the four to provide proposals to the City of Midland. At this time, no details can be discussed, the City of Midland reported on Monday. Insignia Hospitality Group has hotels in 12 cities, according to its website, and four in Midland, two on I-20, the Holiday Inn Express and Suites, and Town Play Suites, the Spring Hill Suites near the Scarver Sports Complex, and Holiday Inn Express and Suites on Loop 250. Insignia Hospitality Group Incorporated is a community-driven, self-sustaining hospitality management and development group dedicated with partnering with Intercontinental Hotels Group, Hilton Hotels Worldwide, and Marriott International to maintain a portfolio of quality assets, Insignia Hospitality Group's website states. We pride ourselves on creating efficient processes which result in financial success without sacrificing a welcoming, family-like atmosphere. Beithler Real Estate Services LLC, according to its website, is a Chicago-based firm that has developed more than 10 million square feet, including some of the largest and most architecturally distinguished projects in Chicago, the surrounding suburbs, and the Midwest. Today, Beithler is a family-run company developing and investing in all types of real estate projects, including office, retail, hospitality, residential, and public-private ventures, its website states. Valencia Hotel, based in Houston, is a hotel management company specializing in the development and operation of full-service luxury hotels, according to its website. Valencia Hotels include the George in College Station, Hotel Valencia Riverwalk in San Antonio, and Hotel Valencia Santana Row in San Jose, California. The company contact for Midland Downtown Renaissance LP is Franklin Mountain GP4 LLC in El Paso, according to TexasBiz.com. Where to Eat Easter Brunch on Sunday? By Morgan Taylor Thomas. Cork and Pig. Although the restaurant won't be serving any Easter specials, the unique brunch at Cork and Pig can easily fill your Sunday brunch needs. The six-choice menu may not sound like much, but everyone can find something they like. Fruity Pebbles French Toast, Mexican Migas, a ham and cheese omelet, a filet hash, Huevos Rancheros, and steak and eggs fill bellies, while smoked bacon, blueberry sausage, country potatoes, and fresh fruit make up the sides. Mimosas, Bloody Mary, and an espresso martini make up the signature drinks. Reservations are highly recommended. 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., regular menu from 3 to 9 p.m. 200 Spring Park Drive, Suite 200. The Patio Draft House. Sweet and savory make up the weekend brunch menu at the patio. Pancakes, waffles, fried chicken, French toast, eggs benedict, burritos, steak and eggs, huevos rancheros, and an array of omelets can be munched on all morning. Reservations are not required. 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Regular menu from 2 to 9 p.m. 2101 West Wadley Avenue, Suite 45. Ranchland Hills. The golf course packs a hearty Easter brunch menu. The buffet-styled meal features thick-cut applewood smoked bacon, sage sausage links, fried hash browns, buttermilk biscuits, and gravy. French toast and fresh whipped cream, pancakes with seasonal berries, and a freshly cut fruit tray. Featured items include shrimp cocktail, smoked salmon lox, rosemary chicken, and balsamic glazed salmon. Guests will also find two build-your-own omelet stations, a smoked pork loin carving station, and a pepper-crusted filet carving station. Side options include a classic Caesar salad, the Ranchland Garden salad, a seasonal fruit salad, red jacket mashed potatoes, wild rice pilaf, garlic roasted carrots, and a seasonal vegetable medley. Fix that sweet tooth craving with a red velvet cake, carrot cake, homemade cinnamon rolls, double chocolate trace cake, and fried donut holes from the dessert station. Wash it all down with a 32-ounce Bloody Mary, mimosas, juice, iced tea, and soft drinks. Adults cost $35, and kids over 4 years old cost $18. Under four, eat free. The brunch is reservation only, so call 432-683-2041 or email service@ranchlandhills.com to book. 10 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., 1600 West Wadley Avenue. Thriving United. Recovery Community Organization, RCO, Thriving United will hold its second annual Free to the Community Easter Brunch and Service at the Horseshoe Pavilion on Sunday. Easter Brunch at Midland's longest table includes a concert by Chad Mattson, singer from Christian group Unspoken, and the Transform Band. David McReynolds, the pastor for churchwide operations at Stonegate, will open. Closing the festivities will be an Easter egg hunt. To reserve a spot, visit thrivingunited.org. Doors open at 12:30 p.m. Service begins at 1 p.m. 2514 Arena Hill. The following chain restaurants will be open and offer either Easter specials or pre-order catering options for at-home eating. Visit the listed website for menu items and pre-order deadlines. Texas Roadhouse, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., 4512 Loop 250 Frontage Road. Cotton Patch, 11 a.m. to 9:30 p.m., 2320 West Loop 250 North. Online, cottonpatch.com/Easter Catering. Cracker Barrel, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., 3108 North Loop 250 West. IHOP, open 24 hours, 2507 Loop 250 North, 301 East Interstate 20. MISD says bond committee to make recommendation around June 20th by Stuart Doreen. The bond committee Midland ISD leaders assembled is expected to come to a consensus around June 20th and then make a final capital project recommendation at that time. The committee will make a recommendation as to what makes sense, Midland ISD Superintendent Stephanie Howard said Monday at the second meeting of the bond committee at Legacy Freshman High School. Nothing has been decided yet. Howard told the committee members they can help tell other community members that no amount, no projects, or even a date is known at this time. It has been reported that district officials are looking at a November election date, but Howard said Monday it is wrong to state that a fall election has been finalized. At the April 20th meeting of the board committee, members will consider the district's long-range plan and other projects. At that meeting, district officials will provide information about academics and grade reconfiguration. There also will be a presentation from architects about building changes and the implications those might have. Lastly, members will organize into groups and continue a discussion about planning for growth, the need to build two new high schools, and general campus improvements. Group work is expected to continue May 4th and June 1st. On Monday, committee members heard from long-range facility committee members and about their report presented to the board in November. Other reports also included work currently taking place with the $237 million in identified deferred maintenance. Lastly, they heard from financial officials who explained current bond indebtedness and the tens of millions MISD officials have saved by refinancing of debt over the last 20 years. Forced into a partnership. Midland ISD Superintendent Stephanie Howard told the committee that the district was forced into a partnership when it came to Lamar Elementary. The board recently approved partnering with Third Future Schools for 3 years to bring Lamar Elementary out of a failing status. Howard told the committee, which included some opposed to 1882 partnerships like the current programs at Houston Elementary and Travis Elementary, that Midland ISD is committed to making sure not another campus fails for 4 consecutive years and therefore force the district's hand to create a partnership instead of closing the campus or turning it over to the Texas Education Agency. Midland ISD Bond Committee. The following is a list of bond planning committee meetings, which are open to the public to attend. All meetings are scheduled to begin at 6 p.m., and future meeting dates are as follows. Midland Freshman High School, April 20th at 101 East Gist Avenue. Yarborough Elementary, May 4th at 6000 Riverfront Drive. Bunch Elementary, June 1st at 700 South Jackson Street, June 20th at a location to be determined. MISD's Board Planning Committee website will be updated with more information as the process continues. You can find it at midlandisd.net/bond. From the Inside Pages. Kent expands to Florida with Tom Thumb acquisition by Mella McEwen. Kent Quick convenience stores are a common sight throughout Midland, Odessa, and other parts of the Permian Basin. Soon they can be found in Florida after the company completes its acquisition of Tom Thumb Food Stores based in Hialeah, Florida. Tom Thumb has 14 stores stretching from Fort Lauderdale and Miami down to the Keys. We have been working on this deal quite a while, since last year, and we're finally ready to announce it. Bill Kent, owner and president of the Kent Companies, parent of Kent Quick, told the Reporter Telegram by telephone. He estimated closure of the acquisition will come in the next 30 to 45 days and will mark the company's initial presence in Florida. Kent has 88 company-owned stores in Texas, New Mexico, and Oklahoma, and does business in Louisiana, Tennessee, North Carolina, and South Carolina. While he said he is proud of being from Midland, he said he sees expanding to new areas like Florida as an opportunity to operate in places that aren't subject to the up-and-down economic cycles the Permian Basin experiences. Like Kent, whose father founded the company, Tom Thumb owners Jimmy and Tom McCarthy are the sons and grandsons of the founders. Being in the same industry, the two families got to know each other well and form relationships, Kent told the Reporter Telegram. I've known the sons half their lives, he said. I've always respected them. They're good friends. The McCarthy brothers have been to Midland and looked over Kent's operations, and the two companies have shared information, building information, and other details, he added. Kent explained that the McCarthy family had reached the point where they had decided if they wanted to grow the business or exit and enter a new phase of their lives. They decided to put Tom Thumb on the market, and Kent won the bidding process. It's an acquisition I'm comfortable with. I'm comfortable with the people. We share the same values. He said plans are to welcome Tom Thumb's team to his company and prepare to expand and grow the company down in Florida. Because it has a good reputation, he said, the Tom Thumb name will remain for the time being. The first step is becoming familiar with the stores and their market, Kent said. Then, he said, we'll do what we do here, which is grow stores. His initial plan is to look at existing stores and see which ones need some investment, which ones may need to be torn down and rebuilt at the same site. Then, he said, he will begin looking at new sites within Tom Thumb's existing footprint for new stores. I'm excited. I think it's a good company, and I think we can make some opportunities for their team that they've not had, Kent said. Kent is also expanding his existing footprint. He says he's looking to buy more land in New Mexico for new stores. Several new stores have opened locally, including one near the airport. A new store north of Midland Country Club is expected to open in April or early May, and another is under construction in West Odessa. He plans to replace the existing small store on North Big Spring Street near the corporate office and another in West Odessa. PNZ approves alcohol designation for Central Midland Restaurant by Mel McEwen. Midland's newest restaurant moved closer to reality Monday when members of the Planning and Zoning Commission approved an alcohol permit request. Commissioners approved, with one abstention, a request by Miguel Hernandez, doing business as Casa Real LLC, for a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a restaurant. He requested the designation for his new restaurant, Si Señor, at 3408 North Midkiff Road, where the Crab Station once operated. According to the application, the restaurant will have a total square footage of 4,126, of which 2,379 square feet will be the designated alcohol serviceable area. Proposed hours are 11 a.m. to 11 p.m., Sunday through Thursday, and from 11 a.m. to midnight, Friday and Saturday. City says intersection at Garfield and Garf Course to be closed. The City of Midland reported that the intersection of North Garfield Street and Golf Course Road will be closed starting Monday. The scope of work, expected to last 3 months, includes the replacement of storm sewer, sanitary sewer, water lines, traffic signal equipment, and paving, the city reported. The replacement of utilities will include deep trenches. The goal is to replace all distressed city-owned utilities and ultimately pave the intersection with concrete designed to last 40-plus years. Traffic will be detoured through the following streets: Community Lane, North Street, Boyd Avenue, Princeton Avenue, Spark Streets, and Humble Avenue. Drivers should be aware that the detours in place will be through the neighboring streets, and it is especially important to adhere to the posted speed limits in the area. Local business and residential access will be maintained at all times from either side of the closure. MPD reports 23-year-old motorcyclist dies after crash in Northwest Midland. A 23-year-old Midland man died Monday night after a collision on Midland Drive in Northwest Midland, according to Midland Police. MPD reported that at approximately 7:15 p.m., the Midland Police Department responded to the intersection of Midland Drive and Bluebird Lane in reference to an accident. The Midland Police Department Accident Reconstruction Unit responded to the scene. An initial investigation revealed the Jeep was traveling westbound on Bluebird Lane when it approached the stop sign at Midland Drive, MPD reported. The Jeep Wrangler then entered the intersection when a black Honda motorcycle traveling northbound struck the Jeep. MPD reported that the motorcycle driver, 23-year-old John Solomon Lee, and the motorcycle passenger, Annalise Lee, both from Midland, were transported to Midland Memorial Hospital. John Lee was declared deceased upon arrival to the hospital. The passenger is listed in critical condition. The investigation is ongoing. The fatality is the 11th reported inside Midland County this year, according to Reporter Telegram records. Midland Police searches for Sam's Club theft suspects. The Midland Police Department is searching for three theft suspects who stole a gaming system from Sam's Club. On March 27th, the three suspects entered Sam's Club at 1500 Tradewinds Boulevard and stole a Cyber Power PC gaming system valued at $2,099. They were seen fleeing in a black Dodge Caravan, according to Midland Crime Stoppers. The suspects are described as a white male with tattoos on his arms, dark colored hair, and glasses. The second male is a younger Hispanic male with a goatee, and the third suspect is a heavier set Hispanic male with a tribal tattoo on his right arm. If a person is the first to submit any information on the suspects and it leads to an arrest, he or she will be eligible for a cash reward. Call Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS or download the Crime Stoppers app, P3 Tips, and submit an anonymous mobile tip. No caller ID is ever used, and those providing information will remain anonymous. Reference MPD case number 230-327-022. Pecos man sentenced to 15 years in prison for attempted murder by Mercedes Cordero. A 35-year-old Pecos man was sentenced last week in a federal court in Pecos to 15 years in prison for attempted murder, according to the Department of Justice. Alberto Jimenez Pastrana shot at a vehicle that his children and their mother were in before crashing into it with his own vehicle and driving away, according to court documents. Pastrana led the Pecos Police Department on a vehicle pursuit after he fled at a high rate of speed from officers. He also shot at Pecos police officers and Reeves County Sheriff's Office deputies, according to the press release. Texas State Troopers, along with the other law enforcement officers in pursuit, tracked Pastrana to a neighborhood south of Pecos where he had crashed and took off on foot, according to the press release. Pastrana eventually ditched his assault rifle and surrendered. Pastrana was charged in a criminal complaint on September 28, 2022, with one count of possession of a firearm by a prohibited person. Pastrana, a convicted felon with four prior felony convictions, was sentenced by U.S. District Judge David Gounce to the statutory maximum sentence. It was very evident that this defendant tried to end the lives of his own children and their mother with both a firearm and a vehicle, said U.S. Attorney Jaime Esparza of the Western District of Texas. I greatly appreciate the joint effort and professionalism by our state and local law enforcement partners who selflessly placed themselves in harm's way in the pursuit leading to Pastrana's arrest. Two Midlanders on a motorcycle die after collision in Ector County by Mercedes Cordero. Two Midlanders died Sunday night in a collision in Ector County, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported Tuesday that Christopher Goodrum and Jessica Goodrum were traveling eastbound on a Harley-Davidson motorcycle on University and approaching Sycamore Street when a 2017 Chevrolet Silverado traveling westbound failed to yield right of way, turning left and struck the motorcycle. Christopher was 40 and Jessica was 38. Both were pronounced dead at the scene and neither were wearing a helmet, according to DPS. DPS officials also reported that the driver of the pickup fled the scene and has not been identified. DPS would like to speak with the registered owner. This crash remains under investigation, and if anyone has any information concerning this crash, please contact DPS at 432-498-2100. The accident happened at 10:35 p.m. Obituaries published in the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, April 5th. Elizabeth Leanne Midkiff Giles, March 8, 1947 to March 22, 2023. With heaviest of heart, we say farewell to Elizabeth Leanne Midkiff Giles, who passed peacefully into the arms of her Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, on March 22, 2023. Leanne was born in Midland on March 8, 1947 to Hunter and Melba Midkiff with big brothers Jimmy and Jerry. She leaves behind her son and daughter-in-law, Brandon and Rachel, her stepson Robert, her brother and sister-in-law, Jim and Pat, brother-in-law, Tommy, grandkids, great-grandkids, and many, many cousins. She is preceded in death by her parents, her brother Jerry, and husband CJ, and numerous aunts, uncles, and cousins. A public visitation will be held April 5th from 3 to 7 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home, 4616 North Big Spring Street, Midland. The chapel service will be held April 6th at 11:30 a.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Chapel. In lieu of flowers and following suit with Leanne's love for animals, memorial contributions are welcome to be made at Masa Rescue, a nonprofit dog rescue located in Midland. Francis Barton. The family of Francis Barton will host a gathering from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday, April 6th at Lake Ridge Chapel and Memorial Designers. A service to celebrate her life of 74 years is scheduled at 10 a.m. Friday, April 7th at Lake Ridge Chapel. Graveside services are scheduled at 1 p.m. Monday, April 10th at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery, Midland. She died on Monday, March 27th, 2023. Please visit online at www.memorialdesigners.net for a service broadcasting schedule, floral purchasing, and an area to share stories of Ms. Barton with her family. Jimmy Samuels. Jimmy Don Samuels was born March 19th, 1974 in Midland, to the late Jimmy D. Wright and Annie S. Hester. Jimmy is preceded in death by his granny, Willie F. Tubbs, brothers Thomas Hicks, Jeremiah Worsham, Glenn Worsham, sisters Frankie Worsham, Lisa Samuels, and baby daughter Memory Samuels. He leaves to celebrate his life his mother, Annie S. Hester, common-law wife, Ashley Lewis Samuels, children Jimmy Don Samuels, Jr., Jamal Samuels, Atresia Bledsoe, Dejon Samuels, Jemnia Samuels, Justice Samuels, Jada Samuels, Jayla Samuels, Jamerica Samuels, Samia Samuels, Samarion Samuels, Saradion Samuels, Seniaha Samuels, plus grandchildren. Viewing of the body will be Wednesday, April 5th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Avalo Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, 1502 North La Mesa Road, Midland. Service will be Thursday, April 6th at 1 p.m. at Bethel Missionary Baptist Church, 410 South Calhoun Street, Midland, with Elder Frank Nelson officiating. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Pamela Jean Thornburg Farmer. Pam was born November 30th, 1949 in Linwood, California, and passed away March 31st, 2023 in Midland, after a long battle with COPD and emphysema. She was preceded in death by her husband, Michael Farmer, parents Otis and Jean Grider, and siblings Debbie Jacobson and Guy Grider. She is survived by her three children, Mary Cook and husband Charlie of Midland, Tammy Thornburg of Midland, and Jason and wife Teresa of Cleveland, Texas, three stepchildren, Aaron, Stephen, and Matt Farmer, and numerous nieces, nephews, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to the COPD Foundation. Mom did not want a funeral or memorial and had been adamant about that for years, and we are honoring her wishes. Death notices from Wednesday, April 5th. Cherie Boone Holtzclaw. Cherie Boone Holtzclaw, 80 of Midland, passed away April 3rd. The family will receive guests from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 5th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, April 6th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Darla Braziel. Darla Therese Raziel of Midland died on 3/30/23 in Midland, Texas. A memorial service will be held on 4/5/23 at Crestview Baptist Church, 301 North Loop 250 West, beginning at 2 p.m. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Joe Howell. Joe L. Howell, Sr. of Midland, died on 3/30/23 in Midland. A memorial service will be held April 10th at 11 a.m. at One Hope Church of Christ, officiated by Scott Shepherd. Loretta Bowling. Loretta Lynn Leslie Bowling, 79, of Midland, passed away Saturday, April 1st. She was born January 20th, 1944, in Mahia, Texas. The family will receive friends for visitation at the funeral home Thursday, April 6th, from 5 to 9 p.m. Funeral services will be Friday, April 7th, at 3 p.m. at Frank W. Wilson Funeral Directors, followed by burial at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Marion Daly. Marion Daly, 81, of Midland, passed away March 31st, 2023. The family will have a memorial service at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Ramona J. Qualls. Ramona J. Qualls, 71, of Midland, passed away April 3rd. There will not be a service. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com.
This is Thoris with the Odessa American newspaper for Wednesday, April the 5th. Headlines: City spent more than $14 million in overtime. During the last 2 years, the city of Odessa has paid out more than $14 million in overtime, with the vast majority of it going to Odessa Police Department and Odessa Fire Rescue employees. Both agencies have been struggling to fill open positions. According to records obtained under the Texas Public Information Act, OPD employees accounted for $3.6 million of the $6.5 million in overtime paid out in 2021, while OFR employees accounted for $1.6 million in 2022. $7.9 million in overtime was paid out, with OPD accounting for $4 million and OFR $2.2 million. Multiple requests to meet with Interim City Manager Agabito Brunel, Mayor Javier Hoven, OFR Interim Chief Jason Cotton, and OPD Chief Mike Girk did not yield results. Girk said he needed permission from Brunel to speak with an Odessa American reporter. Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton unexpectedly retired shortly after the request was made. City Communications Director Monica McDaniel released a statement via text. Public safety is of the utmost importance to the city of Odessa. While the entire community is strained for resources, we labor through these obstacles to serve our citizens. We are Odessa strong. When asked to confirm, no interviews would be scheduled, McDaniel replied. They have been so swamped, they're not going to be able to. While OPD's overtime figures include animal control officers and dispatchers, most of the overtime went to parole officers. According to records, the department is budgeted for 182 certified officers, but in 2021, 32 of those positions were unfilled, and in 2022, 41 were unfilled. Currently, OPD has 57 open officer positions. Last year, the City Council voted 5-2 to provide more than $2 million in raises to Odessa's emergency dispatchers, police personnel, and OFR firefighters using America Rescue Plan Act money after it was revealed OFR had lost more than 70 employees over the last 2 years. As a result of the vote, The department's roughly 200 firefighters received 8 to 20% raises, depending on their position within the department. Dispatchers and police personnel are now being paid commensurate with the top 66% of their colleagues in peer cities. It is unclear if the raises have resulted in increased OFR applications. According to records obtained by the TPIA, the department received 49 applications in January and 34 in February, but the department received 28 and 29 applications in February and March of 2022 and 73 in April of 2022. OFR hasn't just lost firefighter/paramedics. Since last fall, all three assistant chiefs and OFR Chief John Alvarez have retired. City officials were asked to explain the overtime if employees were assigned or volunteered for overtime and if there are national standards for acceptable overtime hours. They were also asked how difficult it is to budget considering staffing shortages and if too much overtime could negatively impact first responders. The top earners and a corporal made more money than GIRC's 2021 annual salary of $149,307, and two sergeants came close to matching his $165,314 salary in 2022. In 2021, a fire captain made more than former OFR Chief John Alvarez's salary of $150,395. Overall, four firefighters and officers put in more than 2,000 hours of overtime in 2021-2022, and one racked up nearly 3,400 hours in overtime. First responders aren't the only ones who receive significant overtime, however. In 2021, a Parks and Recreation employee recorded more than 1,300 hours in overtime, and another employee in the same department racked up 900 hours in overtime. In 2022, a third Parks and Recreation employee recorded more than 1,100 hours in overtime, and an animal control officer recorded just over 1,000 hours in overtime. Hoven has informed all department heads he wants to use zero-based budgeting this year, meaning he wants them to justify all expenses. He has said he wants to make sure all budgeted positions that haven't been filled are truly needed. The mayor hired T2 Professional Counseling for $338,000 in December after the council voted 5-2 to fire Natasha Brooks without explanation. In addition to helping the city find its next city manager, T2 has conducted an organizational assessment and is in the process of providing executive coaching and establishing workflows promoting transparency and efficiencies throughout the organization. The firm is also, quote, assisting managers in creating a confidential system for addressing complaints, end quote. Last month, T2 representatives told the city council the city's turnover rate has slowed down by quite a bit in the last 2 years. According to the consultants, 129 left the city in 2020, 41 left in 2021, and 49 left last year. However, according to records obtained by the OA under the TPIA, 243 city employees left in 2020, 190 left in 2021, and 224 left in 2022. 29 employees left during the first 5 weeks of this year, including Assistant City Manager Cindy Muncy and Director of Development Randy Brinley, who both retired. Assistant City Manager Aaron Smith was fired last month. At the time of their March 7th presentation, T2 noted one-third of the city's staff has less than 3 years with the city and 82 had more than 20 years with the city. Local news roundup. Teen in serious condition after being shot. A 14-year-old boy is in serious condition after being shot twice Monday afternoon. Hector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said deputies received a call about a gunshot victim near FM 3503 and John Ben Shepherd Parkway shortly after 3 p.m. While they were on their way, deputies learned a 14-year-old boy had arrived at Medical Center Hospital in a private vehicle. The boy had been shot twice in the lower torso, Griffiths said. Deputies found shell casings at the scene, but it's unknown if they are related to the boy's shooting, he said. Very limited dialogue was exchanged with the victim as he was taken back by medical personnel for treatment, Griffiths said via text. Information is limited and the investigation is ongoing. Further details will be released as soon as they become available. Odessa man caught on top of house. A 40-year-old man who failed to appear at a court hearing last month is now facing a slew of other charges because officers say he tried to evade arrest Monday and was eventually caught on top of a house with methamphetamine. According to an Odessa Police Department report, one of the city's flock cameras picked up a Ford F-150 associated with Nathan Fox traveling east on Highway 80 from East 8th Street on Monday. Officers spotted the vehicle, but Fox refused to pull over and evaded OPD officers and Texas Department of Public Safety troopers while traveling at a high speed. Eventually, the pickup truck got stuck in a ditch, and Fox ran away despite being yelled at by the officers to stop, the report stated. Fox was apprehended on top of a house on Sunny Grove Drive, according to the report. Fox had 1.5 grams of methamphetamine in his possession, and officers found 3.2 grams of oxycodone and 9.4 grams of tramadol pills in the truck, the report stated. In addition, officers found body armor in the bed of the truck. Because Fox is a convicted felon, he was arrested on suspicion of unlawful possession of body armor by a felon, 2 counts of evading arrest, and 3 counts of possession of a controlled substance. Several of the crimes are third-degree felonies, punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. Fox remained in the Ector County Jail Tuesday on those charges. The failure to appear warrant issued in an accident involving damage to a vehicle case and 2 Midland County warrants. Pecos man sentenced in shooting. A Pecos man who opened fire on a vehicle carrying his children and their mother last September was sentenced to 15 years in prison last week. According to a news release from the U.S. Attorney's Office, Alberto Jimenez Pastrana, 35, shot at the vehicle carrying his family before crashing into it and driving away. During the ensuing high-speed pursuit by Pecos Police Department officers and Reeves County Sheriff's deputy, Pastrana opened fire with an assault rifle. Pastrana was eventually arrested with the help of Texas state troopers after crashing and fleeing on foot into an area containing empty oil field chemical containers and abandoned vehicles, the news release stated. Pastrana, who had 4 prior felony convictions, was charged in U.S. District Court with 1 count of possession of a firearm by a prohibited person. He pled guilty and was sentenced by Judge David Counts to the statutory maximum sentence. Midlander dies in motorcycle wreck. A 23-year-old Midland motorcyclist was killed and his passenger critically injured Monday in Midland. According to the City of Midland, a Honda motorcycle being driven north on Midland Drive by John Solomon Lee and a Jeep Wrangler traveling west on Bluebird Lane collided in the intersection around 7:15 p.m. Lee was declared dead at Midland Memorial Hospital, and his passenger was admitted in critical condition. An investigation is ongoing. City's issues keep coming to light. Here's something you won't see on the City of Odessa's Facebook page. The Odessa American newspaper won not just one, but 2 legal battles with the city late last week. The Texas Attorney General's office ruled the city had to turn over a slew of documents the city's legal department didn't want to release. In a nutshell, the AG's office said none of the reasons cited by the city for withholding the information back in December and January were legitimate. What was the city trying to hide? The results of more than a dozen human resource complaints filed by City of Odessa employees and details of an investigation into injuries sustained by Odessa Fire Rescue cadets last August. Were there any bombshells contained within those documents? Nope. But that's perfectly okay with us. In fact, we're happy about it. But aren't you glad we asked for them? By the way, we continue to wait for the city to hand over a complaint made against a current high-ranking Parks and Rec employee. We'll keep you posted on that issue. OHC students sample neuroscience course. Representatives from the Ector County ISD Innovation Department gave Odessa High School students a sample of the neuroscience course to be offered next fall. The course will be taught by Jody Fernandez, who currently teaches life science. Fernandez said it is open to seniors at this time. George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa is the only school in ECISD that now offers neuroscience. It was taught by Bernadette Barragan there for 2 years. She is now Director of Educational Content for SciGlass. A lot of students don't know that this is an opportunity for them, so we just want to shed some light on the program, and hopefully they can have a lot of students sign up for next year to be in the course, Barragan said. She added that they are now trying to get the course into more schools. It's really important that this course is offered in any school anywhere in Texas, in the country, because it gives students the opportunity to learn about things that they're not exposed to every day, Barragan said. They get to learn about the brain. They get to work with scientists, and they get to see that even though this course is called neuroscience, I know sometimes it can sound a little scary, a little difficult, maybe a little rigorous, it's a really fun course. Just like anything, everything's scary until you learn about it. From NTO, Barragan said the course has gotten a lot of exposure. There is now a school in Mesquite that offers neuroscience. We've had interest from all around the country and in other countries who would like to see this course offered in high schools and post-secondary, she said. Barragan said she hopes to see it in all the schools in Ector County. Hayes STEAM Academy has a vivarium, an enclosed space for raising animals or plants, with cockroaches and backyard brains at the middle school level. Now students can continue that education in high school. They'll start to see the connections as they continue their journey along with educational careers, Barragan said. She added that she's excited about neuroscience coming to OHS because it is a much larger campus than NTO. We want to reach as many students as possible. We want as many students that want to sign up for it to sign up. We want this opportunity for everybody who wants to, Barragan said. University of Texas Permian Basin gets ready for Falcon Giving Day. The fourth annual Falcon Giving Day is coming up April the 12th. We started it in 2020, a month after the COVID shutdown. We had decided to move forward with it because of all the planning we had had behind it. It was actually very successful that year. There was a lot of interest in supporting our students that we had still on campus that weren't able to get home and still in classes. Ever since then, it's been growing every year, said Marisol Kreisman, Executive Director for Advancement Services. Giving Day kicks off at midnight April the 12th through email, solicitations, and social media. Come 8 a.m. in the morning is when we will have a lot more activity with radio station interviews, media interviews. We usually have a little get-together on the first floor where we have Freddie the Falcon, our mascot, greeting guests if anyone wants to drop off their donation. If students want to take pictures with him, that's just more of a fun activity that we do, and it will go all day long, Kreisman said. The following day is when we hope to have a close total of what we've reached. For the day, Kreisman said they highlight four funds and they focus on them every year. It is our General Scholarship Fund, our Student Emergency Fund, our UTPB Food Pantry, and Champions Fund, which is an athletic fund. But when donors go onto our giving page, they can click on Other and make a note to which department or program they would like the funds to go to, Kreisman said. Not only are these funds popular, but they are needed. They don't have criteria. A lot of criteria behind how students can receive that funding, especially for athletics. They don't receive any scholarship funds, so we had a lot of shortages there. The Emergency Fund was a new fund that a donor created in late 2019. The timing was great because we didn't realize how many of those we were going to have 4 months later. So we've continued to stick with that one as well, Kreisman noted. The Emergency Fund is for whatever happens in students' lives, like their car breaks down or they're not able to pay a utility bill, for example. He wanted it to go for those type of incidences. Then we had March 2020 happen, and we had a lot of those happening, so that those funds became very crucial for our students, Kreisman said. Last year, they received more than 300 gifts and around $360,000 was raised. It's at least doubled from the very first year that we had it. Kreisman added that they want to focus on this time of year every year because they have been consistent with it and want to grow it annually. It really was more because it's at the end of the spring semester and it helps prepare for the upcoming academic year to see what funding we have or will have available for the upcoming academic year. It plays off of the fall when we now have our large scholarship ball, and so we want to have a couple of large events for the university. We didn't want to have them all at the same time, she said. Kreisman added that it hasn't been too difficult to get donations. We really have community support. They appreciate the work that we're doing to enhance our donor funds at the university for student support, programming, and research. We have been fairly consistent over the last few years. Our donors and our communities are very generous, she said. Obituaries. Martha Ray Dozer, age 83, died on March the 31st. Carol Warren, age 86, passed away on March the 30th. Mary Ann Johnson, age 74, of Odessa, died Wednesday, March the 29th. Aaron Fuentes, age 21, of Odessa, died Tuesday, March the 28th. Clay Steve Henderson, age 70, of Odessa, died Thursday, March the 30th. Loretta Lynn Leslie Boeing, age 79, of Midland, died Saturday, April the 1st. Charles Lee Minyard, age 57, passed away on April the 1st. Maria Yolanda Orona de Alvarado, age 71, of Odessa, died Thursday, March the 30th. Donna Mae Rapier, age 90, of Odessa, died Thursday, March the 30th.
ED and riding motorcycle. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach, Wednesday, April 5th. Dear Dr. Roach, I have been researching studies of erectile dysfunction linked to motorcycle riding. My gentleman is 58 and has been riding for about 6 years. He has no health problems except for rheumatoid arthritis that only affects his eyes. He does not take any daily medications. During the warmer months when he rides at least 100 miles per week, he experiences ED, for which Viagra has been helpful. When it's cold and his riding is less frequent, he has no issues getting or maintaining an erection. So it certainly appears, at least for him, that there is a link between ED and riding his motorcycle. I'm just wondering if you've ever seen this to be true or have any verified data on the subject. I'm sure your readers who are motorcyclists would be interested in finding out. Answer. Although there is controversy, my reading of the literature says that it is likely that both motorcycle and bicycle riding can cause erectile dysfunction in some men. The problem is usually not severe and, like with your gentleman friend, normally goes away after being off the bike for a while. The problem is direct pressure from the bike saddle onto the pudendal nerve. In addition, motorcyclists have the engine vibration, which can also affect the ability of the nerve to carry information. Bicyclists and motorcyclists both may benefit from differently shaped and perhaps better padded saddles, as well as avoiding riding for long periods of time. Firefighter's wife alarmed by man's behavior at party. Dear Abby, for Wednesday, April 5th. Dear Abby, last night I went to a party where my husband introduced me to all of his coworkers, except for one young female who kept hanging out beside him. She's about 25 years younger than he is, and he's her boss. I thought it was odd that he didn't introduce me. I finally introduced myself because it felt so awkward. He often talks about her, affectionately in my opinion, and what a hard worker she is. Plus that her mother is going through cancer treatment, so he feels bad for her. Abby, my husband has worked with this young woman's father for more than 25 years and has always talked about how much he dislikes him. He says she's the polar opposite of her dad. These people are firefighters, and my husband is their battalion chief. Our marriage has suffered because of his 25 years of alcoholism, and although he's no longer drinking, the effect on me continues. I have learned to pick my battles because he will deny anything that I ask or change a story so I seem crazy. My question is, should I ask my husband why he didn't introduce me? The whole situation didn't feel right. Uncomfortable in the West. Dear Uncomfortable, sure, you have the right to ask your husband anything you wish. Whether you get an honest answer from someone who regularly gaslights you is another question entirely. After he denies it, tell your husband how glad you are to know that nothing is going on because, unlike years ago, sexual impropriety between a boss and a subordinate could cost both parties their careers. Then to ensure that you haven't been exposed to an STD, make an appointment with your doctor to be tested. Dear Abby, every year my wife makes a photo book of the family and sends it to everyone. This year, she included a picture taken during a nephew's birthday party. In it, my father is wearing a politically charged T-shirt. Except she photoshopped the offending to us message out when I asked her not to do that, but instead to remove the entire photo, she refused. She said there were no other good photos from the party, so her only option was to remove the message on the shirt. I'm opposed because my father will be angry when he realizes his shirt has been altered in the photo. He will then bring it up at every opportunity and berate me, my wife, and even my mother about how terrible it was to do that, and for us to not even to bother sending him another photo book again, despite my mother looking forward to it every year. What is your advice for us? Out of Focus in Florida. Dear Out of Focus, it is commonplace for images to be blurred in the media out of concern that they might be offensive or seem to promote a product. I have to wonder why your father would wear a T-shirt with a message on it that he knew would offend the people around him. He does not have the right to censor what mail your mother can receive. Because your wife created the book, she has the right to determine its contents. She should send it to her mother-in-law only and advise her not to show it to Dad. Dear readers, at sundown, the first night of Passover begins. This major Jewish holiday celebrates the most momentous event in Jewish history, the liberation of the Jewish people from slavery in Egypt. Happy Passover to my readers who observe this important holiday. Love, Abby.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.